हरिभिः
सहनावतु सहना भुनक्तु सहधेयङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिः 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 ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
Okay, so the Varnashram concepts, take two, like that. So basically, as we're dealing here, another element that's important in Varnashram is understand its standing within the whole concept, is that you have the original and central feature or point is the Bhagavat, right? In other words, what's directly connected with Krishna, was directly connected with the Lord, devotional service. But that's on the transcendental platform, and it's on the transcendental platform. Then, so Krishna mentions that as your first option, that for a living entity, best surrender unto Him completely right now. Just do it. Right? So that's the best option. If you can't do that, then he says follow the rules and regulations of sadhana bhakti. Right, so that introduces your Pancharatra. Right, because Pancharatra is basically Bhagavat, but in the form of rules. Right, so that natural spontaneity is not there. You have to, through practice, generate that natural spontaneity. Okay, does that make sense? Then, if you can't do that, means that doesn't. What it means, what you can do means what you can do effectively, completely. Right, so surrender to Krishna completely means then you have surrendered 100%. So body, mind, and words is 100% engaged in the Bhagavat process. Therefore, then, you only need the Bhagavat. If that doesn't work, then, to engage body, mind, and words completely, you have the Bhagavat plus the Pancharatra. Does that make sense? So now, if that keeps you completely engaged, so the deity worship and all the different aspects that you'll be doing worship for the deity, plus the, hearing Bhagavatam, chanting, kirtan, harinam, that kind of aspects, if that keeps you busy, then that's all you require. Right? Does that make sense? So we see is when Prabhupada, then if that doesn't keep you fully engaged, there's still distractions, then you add Varnashram. So when you're dealing with Varnashram, you're dealing with Bhagavat, Pancharatra, and Varnashram. It's not that when you deal with Pancharatra, there's no Bhagavat. When you deal with Vedic, there's no Pancharatra or Bhagavat. Does that make sense? So this idea that it becomes the Yuga Dharma, since when did anybody anywhere ever say Varnashram was the Yuga Dharma? They say, well, the Yuga Dharma is Hare Krishna. So yes, so... So the Yuga Dharma was something else in Dwapara. Did they follow Varnashram? In Treta, there was something else. Did they follow Varnashram? Right? In Satya. You understand? So Varnashram's always being followed. Right? That's always going on. Now it's a matter of what's the Yuga Dharma. Right? So you're practicing the culture of Varnashram, but your meditation is your prominent thing, or a culture of Varnashram and yajna and sacrifice is your main thing, or practicing Varnashram, and then deity worship, the Pancharatra is the main, or in this age, then the Harinam Samkirtan. Does that make sense? So it's something different. Right? Just like Chaitanya Charitamrita is the culture of someone who follows Bhagavatam. Right? Lord Chaitanya is a preacher of Bhagavat. Therefore, what is his lifestyle? What is the lifestyle of his devotees? That's Chaitanya Charitamrita. Does that make sense? So, the Vedic culture is the lifestyle for those who are trying to elevate themselves through the authority of the Vedic literatures. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not that it replaces it. So that means we're really not understanding. Right? If we're making our argument that, well, this is the Yuga Dharma, so this is the Yuga Dharma, is it breathing? Right? Is it taking food? Right? Living in a house, that's a Yuga Dharma. So why are we doing it? We only chant Hare Krishna. Does that make sense? So this is the whole point, is that we have to be able to accommodate many things at once. There is spiritual variety. This lack of being able to accept spiritual variety is actually our contamination of impersonalism. Right? Right? We come with that. So now it's a matter of getting rid of it. Does that make sense? So, therefore, it's not a problem that we come with it. That's understood. Right? You know, you get a dog, it comes with fleas. Right? So, that's not the problem. The problem is keeping the anartha of this impersonal understanding. Keeping, not being able to distinguish spiritual variety. And even worse than maintaining attachment to it is professing it. Does that make sense? You have it, you're attached to it. It's understandable. It's been with you a long time. Right? You know, it's like an old shirt. You really like it. You know, it's very comfortable like that. It looks like a rag, but hey, it's very comfortable. So it's impersonalism, you know, but we've had it for a long time. Right? It means if you're still here, you still think you're God. Right? When you stop thinking you're God, you're not here anymore. Right? Does that make sense? It's like the insane asylum. When you're crazy, you're there. When you're not crazy, you're not there. Right? Or the jail. You're a criminal. As long as you're a criminal, you're there. When you're not a criminal, you're not there. So as long as you're thinking that I am the controller and enjoyer, then we're here. When we give that up, we're not here anymore. Right? Does that make sense? So the impersonalist still thinks I'm God. Right? They don't have the gross forms of it, of the material sphere, but the subtle is still there. So you can be on the transcendental platform and still be thinking one's God. That's Vasudev Sattva. Right? The concept is still there. Right? So every living entity before coming into the material world is in that state. Right? That's called, we also know, it's known as the Mahat. Right? The place is the Mahat. The Mahatattva. Right? The consciousness is Vasudev Sattva. Right? You're on the platform of Vasudev, you understand transcendence. But you still think you are that Vasudev. That's the problem. Right? Yes?
When Maharaj, in one of the purport to the Bhagavatam sloka, when Prabhupada is mentioning about Nasta Prayusha, but one of the purport, Prabhupada is saying that on the Vasudev Sattva, one can see Krishna. So,
yes, one can see Krishna. Means, see, it's just like on the liberated platform, there's two positions. That of the devotee and that of the non-devotee. So the non-devotee is called liberation, the devotee is called Brahma-bhuta. So then the devotee will see Krishna as Bhagava. Right? The non-devotee will see him as Brahman. Does that make sense? So the four Kumaras, he's just Brahman. But then when they smell the tulsi leaves, then they are able to then distinguish within Brahman that there are differences. Because otherwise in the Brahman concept, it's all one. But in the personal Brahman understanding, you can distinguish variety within the oneness. Right? So therefore, the devotee's position in Vasudev Sattva is progressive. Right? For the impersonalist or for the non-devotees, it's not progressive. It's just a state they happen to end up in every time Mahavishnu breathes out. Right? They go through that momentarily before everything is created. Right? So they're in that state. So the state of impersonalism, the state of voidism, right? These are always tasted by the living entity every time. When he breathes in, it's voidism. When he breathes out, it's impersonalism. Right? Then after that, then there's, he moves into the material world, the karma. So this, what is it? Raga, bhaya, and krodha, then these things, the living entity is always in those fields. Right? So now we're in the field of kama, raga, the attachment. Right? Does that make sense? You become upset with that, then you go impersonal. When that doesn't work for you either, because it doesn't work, then you go, you know, Buddhistic, right? And I guess that's similar to ballistic, but whatever it is, you decide to throw everything out, right? Impersonal means you throw out form and rasa, interaction, relationship, right? Buddhism, you throw even that out, you know, what's left, that I am Brahman, because that didn't give you any satisfaction either. So they throw everything out. But technically they go back to karma, because they're into sense gratification. Right? So that's why when we say karma, jnana, you know, like that, it's not included. Yoga is included in karma, Buddhism is included in karma, like that. You know, but they just have the touch of, you know, they have the touch of the jnana or this or that, but that's they're in that place because they're active, or they want to enjoy. So then, but you can expand them and then karma, jnana, and yoga. Or in this, you'll say karma, jnana, and you know, the voidism. You know. So personalism, impersonalism, voidism. Right? You get these categories. So there's always the element that we may be talking about one. So like when we talk about varnashram that's not properly being performed, we're talking about the asuric, right? Because what's the improper performance? Not that the rule's not being followed, that it's not connected to Krishna. This is the point, is when we can distinguish variety in spiritual, then we can understand that we can practice Bhagavat, Pancharatrik, and Vedic at the same time. Right? Right? And why are we doing it? Simply because we're conditioned, and we're trying to come to the constitutional position. So to just say, oh, we're not this body, and that's right, but you still think you are. Right? Does that make sense? Rishabhdev does not think he's his body. Right? So Sukadev does not think he's his body. So go for it. So as long as we're conditioned, then these three are considered. In other words, how much you can depend upon the Bhagavat, you would do. Why you would do less. Why you would depend on any other mantras than the Hare Krishna mantra. Right? Then, what that doesn't take up, then you fill up as much of the space that's not taken up by the Bhagavat with Pancharatra. And then what little bit's left, that you then fill in with the Vedic. And as the Vedic is not so important anymore, as we become purified, then you move back to the Pancharatra, because that's not important. You move back to the Bhagavat. Does that make sense? You know? Yeah? So that's the idea. It's not that it replaces. Whoever said it replaces, it doesn't replace. You know? It's just part of life. It's the culture. Because it's a reflection of the spiritual culture. But because people in the material world want the spiritual realm and they want to be God in that, they get the material realm and then they get, you know, some form of it. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, varnashrams also here that can be practiced in the form that's not spiritual. Right? Just like we have senses here, we have a mind, we have intelligence, we have a body, we also have one in the spiritual platform. But this one, it can do spiritual activities or material. Right? So in the same way, the varnashram, the culture of the spiritual, could be used spiritually or not. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense? Yeah? What doesn't make sense?
I'm clear on the mechanics behind conditioned nature. So the conditioned nature, does it reside within the subtle body? And then simultaneously in Gita it says that we're helpless to act according to the modes of nature that we've acquired. So technically, why does, you know, a dog act like a dog, or a woman act like a woman, or a man like a man?
It's been accepted I mean, it's in the consciousness of the living entity. That's why he went through the five stages of consciousness. Mm-hmm. That consciousness, then, that being established, then if it's transcendental, then there is no material consideration. But as we come down into the other levels, then that becomes what's more prominent. Anamoy means the senses are the most prominent for you. Pranamoy means, you know, others, so these isms or, you know, something like that is more prominent. Manamoy means the Dharma is more prominent. Vijnanamoy means being freed from material contamination is more prominent. Anandamoy means devotion to the Lord is more prominent. So does that make sense?
My understanding, though, is that the soul basically only has two choices. It's a binary operation: to accept God or to
reject.
God, or yeah. Reject. So that five levels of consciousness doesn't exist solely on the platform of soul, then.
It's like this: when you accept, means if you accept God, that's anandamoy. You don't accept God, then it's the other four. Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. That's the whole point. In other words, you're following a reflection, but this reflection is illusory. It's like there's a real tree and there's an illusory tree. So we're facing the illusory tree and trying to deal with it like a tree. But we consider it's our tree. And we can do with it as we want. So that's why we're given that tree. Because it's not your tree. Right? The real tree belongs to someone else, and the fruits and flowers and everything are for them. And we can assist in that. Does that make sense? So if we want to call it our own tree, then yeah, have it, go for it, there it is. But that's all it is, it's an illusion. So you've accepted the illusion, so the illusion is a complete package. Right? Om Purnam Adah Purnam Idam, everything's complete. So its whole, you know, environment and everything is complete. So the mundane is complete. So you are fully absorbed and seemingly fully satisfied. But you can't be, because you're a soul, and you can't function in something that's not based on the soul. So does that make sense?
Then where did the modes of nature come into play?
The modes of nature are your sandini, samvit, and ladini, perverted. Everything in the spiritual world is satchitananda. So that means everything here has to be goodness, passion, ignorance. Right? Right? Sat in the spiritual world is the basis is eternity. Here is ignorance. Right? Things are temporary and ignorant. That's the basis. Right? There it's, you know, happiness in service to Krishna and prema. Here it's in trying to please one's own senses. You know, obtaining one's material desire. Therefore, since you're based in the eternal and you're serving the eternal, therefore your activities are also eternal. They're, you know, they're devotion. Well, here in the material world, since you think you're this body and you're engaged in your own sense gratification, your activities are that of sense gratification. You know what I'm saying? So it just reflects. So the whole idea is we're trying to give up the attachment to the reflection here and attach ourselves to the, you know, actual position. That's all we're trying to do. But we're very, very determined. You know what I'm saying? Okay, you know, something happened, and so I feel, you know, how do you say, humbled in a certain situation. Right? So that being humbled in that situation, then being humbled in that situation. Okay, and there I accept maybe I'm not in control. But then other situations I think I still am. You know, I've accepted one part of the philosophy, but not another part. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, all the philosophy, all that, you know, hearing it again and again, the practice of it, the application of it in various aspects, because people think they're the body and it's very important to them, like that, therefore you have to have Ayurveda. Right? Otherwise, why do you need Ayurveda? Right? Because they have something to say, and what they have to say may not be useful, therefore you have logic. right? Because they have different perspectives how they want to see this world, because they don't want to see it in connection with God. Therefore, you have mimamsa, you have your philosophy, right? So that you'll follow the example of those who have followed a practiced a elevating path. Therefore, you have Purana. Right, you have to communicate, you have Sanskrit, right? You're going to, since you're in this world, you're going to purify yourself, therefore you have to have some scars, right? And sacrifice, yajna. That yajna, how do you determine when's the proper time? Therefore you have astrology, right? And all this is based on the Veda. Does that make sense? So the devotees use the same thing to elevate themselves to the transcendental platform, which is the origin of all this stuff anyway. And the materialists use, the pious materialists use the same material, but for getting a better situation in the material world. Right? In other words, they're coming closer to the actual direct reflection. Those who don't want to follow it, then they're acting basically in even a perversion of the reflection. Right? So perverted reflection. You understand? It's already perverted in that we think we're God. Right, so mothers are there, fathers are there, children are there, houses are there, wealth is there, position is there, everything is there, like in the Vedic culture, it looks just like in the spiritual world. Right? But it's perverted because it's not centered around Krishna. It's centered around herself. But it looks exactly the same. Then if you don't follow the Vedic culture, then even the form of it, the reflection, is perverted. You know? So it becomes a perverted perversion. Yeah. You understand? Yeah. So that's the thing, is everyone wants the ideal in the material world, but they're not willing to follow the process to get it. They want it just because they want it. You know, it's like little kids, they throw a tantrum, I want it, and so therefore they figure because they yell and scream and, you know, stomp their feet or hold their breath till they turn blue or, you know, do something, that's going to get it for them. So even though, you know, they're decorated with terms like PhD or other things like that, it still doesn't mean that they're not like little kids throwing a tantrum. Just because they want it, no, you have to follow the Vedic rules to get it. That's all. You know, it doesn't matter who you are. You may be, you know, a big, big man, or you may be a criminal. You go into a shop, you want something, you pay the price, you get the goods. You know, it's not like, well, you know, I'm the, you know, how do you say, congressman here, why do I have to pay? You know, or, you know, well, I'm the thief, why should I pay? You know what I'm saying? So, no, it's that you have goods, you pay, you get the goods. Right? So you want wealth, you want knowledge, you want these things, so you have to perform pious activities. If you don't, then you're stealing. And then what happens if you steal? You have it now, but you lose it later. Right, you got it through proper means, then you have it. It takes you a little longer to get it, but when you have it, you keep it. Right, so they can elevate themselves through improper methods. They can do it, but what will be the long-term result? You know what I'm saying? When devotees actually, you know, having, you know, come from the material sphere into Krishna consciousness, tried that possibly in a way where they weren't very, very knowledgeable in what they were doing, so certain aspects they didn't apply very well, and so then they reject it and go back to whatever crap they were living before, and then how long until that doesn't give them the satisfaction like it didn't give them before they became a devotee? So once that happens, then what do they have left? Because they have no alternative. Right? The intelligent thing is I tried something, it didn't work so well, therefore try it again with better application, right? That's how any intelligent man in this world has become successful. Right? Non-successful people try it, it doesn't work, they throw the whole thing out. He tried business, it didn't work, he threw it all out, and therefore no, economics is bogus. Right? Does that sound familiar? We tried Varnashram, it doesn't work, oh, it's bogus. It doesn't apply in this age. I tried the business, it didn't work, so therefore business is bogus. Right? What about the guy who's a billionaire? He's laughing at you. You know what I'm saying? And so what? You have a PhD in economics. You still don't know what you're doing. Right? Name me one businessman with a PhD in economics. There aren't any. Even they know, don't even bother going past an MA. Right? They don't even bother. Right? You hire people with an MBA. You don't hire anyone with a PhD in economics. They teach at the university. They cannot do business. If they could, why would they be working at a university? You know what I'm saying? They're telling you billion-dollar plans what you could do, but they can't do them. Right? So therefore, in the modern school, you say, if you can't do the activity, teach it. Right? If you can't teach it, teach the teachers. You understand? So therefore, the people who are teaching these things, they can't do them. And the ones that really pontificate the stuff, they can't even do that.
Well, in their defense, couldn't you say they get more pleasure out of the intellectual stimulation rather than...
Intellectual stimulation, yes, but then they shouldn't be speaking against economics. Right? In other words, they have faith in it there. But I'm talking about those who don't. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, so we crossed lines there. Because in the Vedic, is those who can do, they teach. Not the one who can't. Like, you always hear the stories that the king's priest went off and was doing this yajna, or this great sage was off doing this yajna and stuff like that. So people that can do something, they're the ones that... Someone who can administrate, they're the administrator. Right? It's not a matter of, oh, he's been around longer, or, you know, he's a Prabhupada disciple, or any of that stuff. No, it's who can manage, manages. You know, he's a Prabhupada disciple. Then be a Prabhupada disciple, right? You know, that's what he's expert at, being a Prabhupada disciple. Who said he's a great at being manager? You know what I'm saying? So what do the two got to do with each other? Right? Senior means management. You understand? It means, what is the conditioned nature of this Prabhupada disciple? He should be engaged according to that. Right? He giving the Bhagavatam class, leading preaching, all those things, then that's great. But what has that got to do with this? You know what I'm saying? So the point is to be able to distinguish, have the intelligence to distinguish these things. Because people don't want to use their intelligence to distinguish. Because no one wants to be the Shudra. No one wants to be the dependent. No one wants to be on the bottom. Everyone wants to be on the top. What's that called? Right? Where does that mentality come from?
Be God.
Everyone wants to be God, right? There's one God, and everybody else is a servant. But everybody in the material world wants to be God. Therefore, there's the competition here. Prabhupada always talks about competition. Because everyone's trying to be in the same position. Spiritual world, that composition is, no one's trying to take someone else's position. They're trying to do their service better than the other person does their service. No one's trying to take it. But here, everyone's trying to be God, so everyone's trying to take each other's position. Does that make sense? So we have to be very, very... In other words, intelligence, if we claim to be intelligent, we claim that the modern man claims he's intelligent, it's not sentimental... But we find that there's a great lack of intelligence because he can't discriminate. One, they can't tell the difference between material, various gross and subtle material. They can't tell the difference between subtle material and general spiritual. And they can't tell the difference within spiritual. So how are they intelligent? You know what I'm saying? How is it real intelligence? You know, it's like that story of the boatman, and then you had the scholar. You know, and then the boat's sinking. And the scholar had already asked the boatman, you know, do you know astrology or these kind of things? And he said, no. And he said, well, you know, a quarter of your life is wasted, you know, or like that. And they said, well, you know, do you know, logic and all this? He says, no, well, this, you know, half of your life is wasted, like that. And then it starts to rain and the boat's sinking. And then the boatman asks the scholar, says, do you know how to swim? And he says, no. And he says, 100% of your life is wasted. You know, so Prabhupada is making the point is that one may be knowledgeable, but if you don't know Krishna consciousness, you don't have faith in Krishna, and Krishna's words, his instructions, right? Krishna says, I have nothing to do, right? I have nothing to do in this world, but I do things. And what? How does he do it? Just what he pleases? He follows Varnashram. Why? Because he wrote Varnashram, right? Manusamhita is the main Dharma Shastra. That is the knowledge that Brahma gave to his sons, and now is being spoken by them. Right? Brahma says he got it from Vishnu. So when Vishnu comes, he follows what he speaks. Right? So then to say it doesn't, you know, so that's what God does. And how does he do it? He does it without attachment. So all God's asking you to do, if you want to associate with him, when he's in this material world, he follows Varnashram without attachment. So therefore, you want to be with him, you follow without attachment. Right? He's devoted to his devotees, you be devoted to him. Then you're on the same level. Right? Otherwise, how does non-equals interact? So if you're not on the transcendental platform of, that God's on, how can you interact with him? Right? Therefore, in puja, you have yoga before ija, to bring yourself to the transcendental platform. Then you can worship the Lord. Does that make sense? So discrimination is very, very, very important. We don't have discrimination, we're never actually going to be able to apply the philosophy very well. Does that make sense? So that's all, you know. So the Varnashram is the natural culture between transcendental personalities. It's the natural form, right? In Vrindavan, you have the Vaishyas. They maintain Brahmins. They pay tax to the Kshatriyas in Mathura, and they have so many Shudras that assist them, right? That's already there. You have people that are unmarried. Right, Krishna and the cowherd boys, young ones are unmarried, right? The older gopis and cowherd men, they're married, right? You always have, you know, renunciates and sadhus and saintly persons coming into Vrindavan. Now and again, you hear of them in the pastimes. So, what's that? That's Varnashram, or would that maybe be Varnashram? Right, but it's all for Krishna's pleasure. So therefore it's Daiva Varnashram. And in Braj, that Daiva Varnashram is still in the form of spontaneous devotional service. While in Vaikuntha, then it's in regulated devotional service. Right? So that'll be the difference. You know, there it's the medium, so they play with it. In Vrindavan is simply the culture that they use. Therefore, Maru Mangal will joke that, well, Bharat Muni, and they quote all the scriptures. They're in Vrindavan, they're talking about Bharat Muni's Natya Shastra. They're talking about Bhagavad Gita. You know, they're talking about, you know, all the different, the Dharma Shastra, the Artha Shastra, the Kama Shastra, the Moksha Shastra, the Upanishads. They talk about all of them in Vrindavan. So Maru Mangal is saying that, while they're eating lunch, you know, Bharat Muni talks of, you know, eight bhavas, you know, the sattvika bhavas, like that. But in my opinion, there's only six, right? You know, so they're using it as a medium for pleasing Krishna, right? So then he sees, you know, he's saying that, you know, when I see the prasad that Mother Jashoda has cooked, you know, then, you know, my hairs stand on end, you know, and then when it's served to me, then my voice chokes up, and then, you know, when I taste it, then my body is stunned, and, you know, it goes like this through all the different bhavas. Does that make sense? So they use it as a medium. It's purely to please Krishna. So that's what's being asked here, is use the Varnashram to engage those aspects of your nature that you are not being engaged by Bhagavad or Pancharatrik in Krishna's service, just like the Brajavasis do. Right? But since we're not on that transcendental platform, Therefore, we use it according to the rules and regulations. That's all. Right? Transcendental, spontaneous. Not transcendental, not spontaneous. Right? Within sadhana bhakti, you know, in other words, you know, what is it? Sadhana and what's it? Sadhya? Yeah, sadhya, they perfected, or sadhana is trying to obtain perfection. Then within that, then there'll be, you know, its natural form or its regulated form. You know, so we have to be able to tell these distinctions. Then varnashram makes a lot of sense. All it is it's keeping you busy doing whatever you do. You know what I'm saying? I would say the devotee who's even making the constant, we only chant Hare Krishna, wouldn't even be able to identify how basically, you know, 80% of his life is pancharatra. They wouldn't be able to identify that. Neither would they even be able to identify the mantras. Well, we only chant Hare Krishna, so that means you don't chant your Gayatri, right? No, I chant my Gayatri, but did you know that your Gayatri is a Vedic and Pancharatra Gayatris? There's no Bhagavat Gayatris. Right? So that means you have mantras in all three, and then you're going to bash the Vedic? You know, the reason that you wear a thread is not because of Pancharatra or Bhagavat. It's because of Vedic. The Brahman thread goes with the Brahma Gayatri. It doesn't go with the other Gayatris. Right? So because the Brahmins are initiated with Upanayanam in the Brahma Gayatri, therefore they wear the Brahman thread. So if you really are only into chanting Hare Krishna, take off your Brahman thread. Right? Keep the neck beads. That's Gaudiya. But the Brahman thread, that is simply, that's Vedic. They won't do that. Because then the new bhaktas will think they're just another devotee. Right? You know, you wear just pure white. You wouldn't wear any colors. Right? Because you're not involved in anything. So you wouldn't wear saffron, and you wouldn't wear other colors, right? The grihasthas wear so many colors. You wouldn't wear that either. You would just wear pure white, no Brahmin thread, you know, your tilak, your neck beads, and you just chant. Chant, preach, study Bhagavatam, you know, take prasad with devotees. That's all you do. So if you can do that, can't get better than that. But if that's not what you're doing, then kindly drop, you know, the improper presentation. Right? Because the point is they're following all these things. That you get up in the morning, you offer your obeisances, that's pancharatra. You know, that you roll up your bed, that's pancharatra. That you go to the toilet and clean yourself afterwards, that's pancharatra. Malechas don't clean themselves, right? So if we're being really modern, then they should all go back to toilet paper, and probably a lot of them do. Then after that, then you brush your teeth, then you clean your tongue. That's also pancharatra. Of course, brushing your teeth is, you know, the doctor recommends is cleaning the tongue. They haven't quite figured it out. Some have figured it out. So therefore, I don't do it because I don't even know about it. You know, but most of their stomach problems will go away if they clean their tongue. Right? Then after that, rinsing your mouth properly and everything like that. Then taking their bath. This is pancharatra. Right? Then having done that, they'll dry themselves. Right? That's pancharatra. Like that, you know, it's like you have a blow dryer, that's not pancharatra. That you have something that you wipe your hands with, that's pancharatra. Because if you blow dry, it's still dirty. Because otherwise you haven't taken the dirt off. Right? Like that from a bath. So all these different things, that's pancharatra. That then you're going to, how you say? You know, then you have neck beads, you wear your Brahmin thread, you wear your clothes, your tilak, say Achman, do Gayatri, you know, after you put tilak, this and that, you check yourself, you look in the mirror, that's Pancharatra, these are Pancharatra. You go to the temple, you ring the bell, you offer obeisances, you say spiritual master, prayers to the spiritual master, that's Bhagavat. I mean, that's Pancharatra. Right? You go to Mangalartik, that's Pancharatra. That you worship the deity is Pancharatra. At Guru Puja, that's Pancharatra. That at a regulated time you have Bhagavat class, the Bhagavatam class, that's Pancharatra. That you chant Japa at a regulated time, that's Pancharatra. If you chant all day, that's Bhagavat. But if you chant, this is I chant here, I chant there, That's Pancharatra. You study the scriptures, you take care of guests, that's Pancharatra. Right? You serve the devotees, you serve Tulsi, you take prasad. You live in the Dham, you serve the Dham, this is Pancharatra. Right? You do some particular service for the deity, that's Pancharatra. Right? Does that make sense? So then, what happened to family life and all that? It's not there. You could be doing that, you can be a grihastha, but that's not the Pancharatric aspect. What I've described, that's Pancharatra. You know, preparing things for the deity, cooking for the deity, getting the paraphernalia, making clothes, outfits, you know, ornaments, altars, you know, different facilities, that's all Pancharatra. So what's missing now? Right? We've got chanting Hare Krishna, we've got all the deity worship, we have our lifestyle that they wouldn't have been able to identify that all that is Pancharatra. They would have said that's all Bhagavat. No, that's Pancharatra. Now what's left? Your whole family life scene, your whole social scene, your whole management scene, right? Your whole email scene. So what's that? That falls within Vedic. So now, just as Pancharatra, deity worship, you follow the rules of Pancharatra, then in all these other things, you follow the rules of Varnashram. Does that make sense? So to not follow it, then that's cheating. To say it doesn't apply, it's like, who said it doesn't apply? Just like the criminal says the laws of the land don't apply. And what happens to them? They get caught, put in jail. Yeah. Does that make sense? So it's cheating. You know, it's God's creation, it's God's nature. The trees still do the same things they did 5,000 years ago. You know, the dogs, the birds, the beasts, the, you know, the cats. Cats still meow, right? Dogs still bark. Right? What changed? Right? The ladies have the babies, the men don't. Kids are smaller than parents. Right? You know, old people get gray hair. Right? You know what I'm saying? Men grow beards, women don't. What's changed? You still put your food in your mouth, you breathe through your nose, you still have lungs, heart, kidney, liver, spleen. Right? They're all there. What has changed? All that's changed is their perception. In other words, their philosophy, their mimamsa, their interpretation of the shastra and the laws of God. That's what's changed. But the actual laws and the facility to perform them is still there. All you have to do is see through that vision. Right? And just like previously, even in the Vedic age, not that many people were necessarily committed dynamic devotees. So in the same now, it's the same. It will be less people. Prabhupada said 1% of the planet, of the human population is practicing Krishna consciousness. Then you're dealing with, you know, Satya Yuga. You know what I'm saying? 1%. We're not saying 100%. We're saying 1%. Okay? You're okay with that percentage, a little more, a little less. Does that make sense? So, what does it mean? You know, as they're saying, oh, they're not the facility. There are, when, back in the 60s, how many vegetarians were there?
A lot less.
A lot less. You know, the hippies were vegetarian. Otherwise, the mainstream culture and what you'd buy in a shop, in a supermarket, was not vegetarian. Right? Nowadays, you have supermarkets that not only is vegetarian, it's organic. Whole supermarkets, sometimes even as big or bigger than your other ones. You know what I'm saying? There's more facility. The common person has heard of Eastern philosophy. It's like philosophies, you know, speaking philosophy about sadhana, karma. These are common words in people's vocabularies. In the movies, they mention it. This happened to you. Oh, that's your karma. Two karmis in a Karmi movie are talking about karma. Right? In the 60s, they hadn't heard of it. It's some weird thing that some bohemians or a few hippies say. You know what I'm saying? Hippies with a little bigger vocabulary than, you know, what do you call it? Cool. Or, you know, like that. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Yeah, I know what you mean. You know what I mean? Yeah, okay. Yeah, I can dig what you mean. Oh, yeah, that's so cool. Yeah. That was a very intellectual conversation between the hippies. Right? You know, so it's like if you have, 25 words, you're doing good. So add karma to that, that's 26, so it's like, what I'm saying? And then they're saying it's harder to preach now, it's not the same. There's more facility, there's more everything. You have yoga centers. They're already chanting Hare Krishna. It's got nothing to do with us. Absolutely nothing. There's more people in America outside our temples chanting Hare Krishna than what we're arranging for people to chant Hare Krishna. We chant in our temples. But outside our temples, what's going on? That's being arranged as a congregation by karmis. Not us. So what is this? Oh, it's so difficult. You just have to go in and start talking about the, chanting, what it means, all these different things. What's yoga? What it means? What are the different levels of yoga? What's sadhana? What it means? What's karma? What's pre-death? It's like you can walk in and use our vocabulary and they're on the same page. And then it doesn't fit. Oh, we have to fit in. Fit in? Yeah, they're fitting into us, but we're fitting into them. Right. I was in the Heathrow Airport. I had a grandma come up to me, and ask me about Ayurveda and the three doshas, that you have a pitta, kapha, or vata, body. And so there's one Ayurvedic doctor there who's giving seminars, and he's talking about diets for these different things. And she was asking me, is this bona fide or is this bogus? Right? A 60-year-old lady, English lady, dressed as an English lady. And she's asking me, because you see, some kind of Indian, sadhu in that, is this bona fide? Because Ayurveda's from India, so is this guy, okay? Is what he's saying is okay? Right? And we got to fit in. Right? So this is the whole problem, is if we don't have faith in this, how is it going to work? Bhagavad Gita is starting about perform your prescribed duties. Who defines prescribed duties? God or the masses? So that's the point. Even Bhagavad Gita is starting with this premise. Mahabharata, right, is even taking this for the women, children, friend of the twice born. Right? But where is it starting? On Dharma. So if you can't accept that, then you're lower than the kids. You know what I'm saying? Because the kids are at least human. Therefore we go back to yesterday's point of the tribals. You know what I'm saying? And in this case, specifically the Germanic tribals. Yes?
Only a short question. The demigods and the demons, they all have
Balashram? They all follow. Everybody in the universe, on all the planetary systems, follow it. Even on the earthly planetary system, the seven mandalas, or the other six all follow it. On this one, they should be following it. They do for three ages, but in this age, they prefer not to. Just because they want to live like animals. So there's always that. You can live like a cultured person, or you can not. The choice is yours. So they all follow Varnashram. Varnashram simply means that one is according to the inherent nature of each living entity. What is their, what inspires them, what is their goals, what are the, therefore the methods that they find pleasing, that you deal with other people according to that. That's all it's saying. Right? Does that make sense? That's all it's saying. You know, a Brahmin is intellectual. He follows sadhana. He's into purity. Therefore, you discuss with him and deal with him on that platform. That's varnashram. Right? You take intellectual as valuable. Therefore, you deal with him in that way. Right? The kshatriya's prowess, you know, his dharma and all these things. That's what's important. You deal with him on that. He thinks he's a big guy, therefore... You know what I'm saying? The king's going down the road. You move out of the way. Why? Not because Brahman doesn't have to move. It's his road. Like that. You know, king should ask his permission to use the road. But because the king thinks he's a big guy, and therefore he's going with his whole retinue, therefore you let him pass. You know what I'm saying? You know, kids are nuts. They think they're, you know, the center of attention. So therefore, that's how you deal with them. Right? You know, they think if I don't eat right now, I'm going to die. So therefore, you feed them now. When there's a little more brain that they can understand, I'd like to eat now, but I know I'm not going to die, then you can start talking to them about regulation. Does that make sense? So you're dealing with every entity according to its nature. A brick has a nature, what it can do, right? It'll hold up a building. It won't cut your potatoes. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So everything has a nature. There's nothing that doesn't have an inherent nature. Water is wet. We use it for things that we like to make wet. You know what I'm saying? Fire's hot. We use it with things that we want to make hot. Right? So if we were using fire to, you know, cool something or water to make something warm, then we got a problem. Right? Does that make sense? So you have to find the nature of something. That's varnashram dharma. All it is giving the detail of it, because it's a human being who's operating, you start from there. Who are you? If you can understand who you are, you can understand who others are. You can understand who others are, then you can understand your relationship. Those who can understand what is their proper relationship between myself and others, they can then lead that. Right? And if you lead that, then you deal with even bigger than just, you know, all the levels of humans, but also beyond that. Your economics, your justice, your sense gratification, you know, your forests, your animals, your birds, like that. And then the whole point is that in that they must elevate themselves to the point of Krishna consciousness. So leadership has to look at Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha and Bhakti for everybody. Does that make sense? So that's it. That's what varnashram is. Very simple. What is the inherent nature in something? But devotees will take it, oh, you know, king who wears a crown and, you know, or, you know, carries around a big sword or an AK-47 or something like that. You know, that makes him a kshatriya. No, he has an inherent nature that makes him a kshatriya. Yudhishthira Maharaj in the forest in deerskins is still a kshatriya. No crown, no nothing. You know, but still he's a kshatriya. You know, that was Krishna's point to Arjuna. You give it all up, you'll still act the way you like that. So even someone says, I only chant Hare Krishna, they're still going to act according to their nature. Oh, well, we're beyond the time. Okay, so then we'll end for the day.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.